Thanks, Mark. Good to see you there, and thank you for inviting me. And yeah, it's funny when I get asked to do a share, it's like, oh, where will I begin? And there's so much, and I can't say it all. And I want to start off with a profound reading when I'm not, because I didn't find it. I didn't have time to find it. I was just working with a sponsee before the meeting started, and she was sharing in depth with me, and that's an amazing, amazing privilege that I have since getting sober, that I am trusted and loved and confided in, because people know that they can trust me. And it's a beautiful feeling, actually. And it's not something that I share about very much, but it's just because it happened now just before the meeting. And somebody, who's coming through a lot of difficult times and is coming out the other end. And that's partly because of my support as well, because she knows that she can say what she needs to me, and that I've been in those places too. For me, I started drinking very heavily at the age of 15, and looking back on it, maybe it saved my life, because I was somebody who had an awful lot of fear and no self-worth. I had a lot of crazy dreams and fantasies, but they weren't based in my reality. And so, by the age of 15, I discovered alcohol, and it gave me this confidence and this freedom and this feeling that I could do anything and go anywhere and be anybody. And that being anybody was anybody but myself, because I didn't feel comfortable in my own skin. I didn't feel co good enough. I didn't feel like it was good. It was cool to be me, just wanted to be. And I had always been that way before I ever drank. I'd been that way as a young girl. I'd see another girl in the class and, oh, I just wanted to be her. I didn't want to be me. I wanted to be the most popular, and the most wanted and the most loved and the best at everything, I hated not being the best, and that made me feel like I didn't try a lot. I didn't want this school business, because I wasn't the best, I wasn't the top. So I wanted to get out of school as quick as I could. I left at 16, and I just didn't have a clue. I mean, 16, I know it is quite young, but it was like, what are you going to do now? Oh, I don't really know. My parents had a shop, so I ended up working in the shop. And I knew that wasn't what I wanted to do, but I didn't have a clue. I did a bit of traveling then when I was 17, or rather, that was 18. But before that, I'd taken an overdose. I wanted to die at the age of 17. I'd saved up some tablets. I think I went on antidepressants when I was quite young. I couldn't cope with life, really. My first, it wasn't a love affair because it wasn't consummated, but I went out with a guy when I was 15, and when he called it off, I just couldn't cope. I couldn't cope at all. I remember I'd sit on the floor of this nightclub and I'd have the bottle of sherry up to my head, just trying to drown the uncomfortable feelings, the feelings of pain and rejection and all of that that went with it, So by the age of 17, I just was totally not coping, I'd got these tablets, I'd saved them up, I'd been on a skite of drinking, and I came home and I got them, and I thought, this is it. It's enough, it's enough. My father found me that night. I don't know how. He must have got up to go to the bathroom or something, and I don't know. But anyway, taken to a hospital and pumped, and was kind of scared after that, scared of actually doing it again, even though I was very obsessed with it. But part of me, because of course I was falling in the door drunk, it wasn't a very ladylike drink in mine, it was falling in the door, knees cut open, vomiting in the sink, really bad blackouts, really bad hangovers from the word go. So obviously, as a young girl, my parents were, especially my mother, was really angry with me, was trying to rein me in, was telling me I was an alcoholic at a young age. And sure, I just didn't have a clue. And I just thought she hated me. And I just thought, if I can get away from this fucking family as soon as I can, my life is going to be amazing, you know? So I was dreaming of becoming 18 when nobody could tell me what to do any longer. And yeah, after that overdose, a few months later, I'd ran away from home, gone to my sister who lived in London and was staying with her. And was drinking heavily, working in a bar, of course. That was my go, you know, the place where I'd feel comfortable, where I could meet people, where I could drink. I don't remember it, but my brother came to visit me, opened a cupboard, and it was full of empty sherry bottles. So I obviously used to drink before I'd go to the bar at night time. And chaos ensued as usual, you know, that was just my life. It was just it was all this ups, the ups and downs of alcoholism. I wasn't still taking tablets anymore because they actually terrified me. The effect when I took them antidepressants and drank on top of them was really terrifying. I can't really explain it. It's just like I was out of this world, but I was in this world. So I can't explain it any more than that. But I didn't continue taking them. I think a psychiatrist saw me very briefly and just said to me after the overdose, "You won't do this again." And I said, "No." And that was the end of that. There was no talk about anything about help or drinking or treatment centers. And I went on a merry-go-round for the following 15 years of alcoholism from the age of 15 until the age of 29, you know, trying to escape. And when I look back on it now, I was trying to escape myself, you know. But I kept thinking that if I start off in a new place, in a new country, in a new job, in a new course, in a new relationship, I'll be different. And of course, I wasn't because I took my head with me. So, on my last geographical, which was moving to Ireland, yet again, I'd come back and over. My family is Irish, and I felt a real draw here, and I felt more of a freedom from England. And yeah, wanted to live in a van, go around all the flowers and festivals, not pay any rent, not pay any taxes, not be beholden to anybody. You know, that's what I imagined freedom would be like. And I was only living in Dublin for 1 year, and I ended up going to Alcoholics Anonymous, thinking that they might be able to show me how I could cut down on my drinking. And that was the beginning of my recovery. I went to my first meeting in Dublin in Madonna House. And if anyone's ever been to Madonna House here, it's got massive holy statues all the way up the stairs. And I thought, oh, Jesus. You know, I was brought up Catholic, a really strong Catholic background that I rebelled against and didn't go to mass and was told I'll never have any luck by my poor mother, bless her. And then I came to this place where it was all these holy statues. But anyway, I got some solace of some kind in the meeting. Well, it was more after the meeting, the chat afterward, because in the meeting itself, I don't know, I didn't quite know what was going on. But after the meeting, because I thought, well, I couldn't be an alcoholic because I don't drink every day. You know, I just was a person that went on benders and then would be reeling after the bender until I could get my guts together for the next bender. So, I wasn't a moderate, constant daily drinker or anything like it. But so I met other people after that meeting that we chatted, and I thought, oh yes, that's me. Yes, I don't have to be a daily drinker to be an alcoholic. I use it for my emotions. It was like medication for me, really. Alcohol, yeah, it soothed my very unbalanced soul. And when it was taken away, then nobody took it away. I took it away myself. But because I started to realize very, very, very slowly that I could not drink safely. And yeah, so I was left with that raw feeling of being 15 years old with no self-worth. In fact, it wasn't just no self-worth, it was self-hatred, you know. And then I just started to discover all those fears, and that felt like more self-hatred came along, you know, but something was changing very, very slowly inside me, in that I started to uncover that I was an alcoholic. I started to gradually accept it and to accept that I couldn't drink again safely. And gradually I got the willingness that I didn't want to drink again. You know, because I got hope. I heard people sharing, you know, my first year in sobriety was Bray in County Wicklow. And I used to get regular meetings there and became part of that group, you know. And I got hope for the first time. And then doors started opening for me that I was 30 years old and I could start to look at life in a different way and start to like that work wasn't just for getting money for drink, had been up until then, that I started discovering creativity within myself and I started to follow that path. And my life was still just crazy around me. You know, my head was out to get me, as I've heard in here. But I actually started, I used to go set dancing twice a week. And I think that saved my life in my second year of sobriety. Because even in my second year of sobriety, I started going out with a drunk. You know, I was attracted to a drunk and I started to go out with him and try and get him sober for a whole year. So that was my cause, you know, and I can see my codependency is very, very strong. You know, I just discovered that in my sobriety. But gradually I gave up that cause, you know, and in the meantime, I'd found myself a really nice sponsor, a really nice lady who was kind of took me under her wing and was very loving and caring. And I just knew she wanted me to be sober and, you know, just hanging out with her at the end of a meeting, having a cup of tea with her, going back to her house, her cold house, sitting by the fire with her, having another cup of tea, you know, it showed me that somebody cared. And that was really, really important for me. She passed away in sobriety many years ago, but those early days was just really, really special. And I moved, you know, moved from the east coast of Ireland to the west coast, where I started doing a course in creativity, and that opened up my life. You know, my life has changed immeasurably, and I've stayed sober. I'm in the No Matter What Club, so I've stayed sober since 1987. As Mark said, it's December 1st is my sobriety date, and I have to say it got better. Otherwise, I just would have drank again. You know, because it was kind of like jumping off a cliff. They do say the jumping off point, and it definitely was the jumping off point for me. You know, I felt like that emptiness inside myself that I'd always tried to fill with alcohol, with people, with something. You know, the me underneath it all wasn't good enough. And then I had to start trying to find that. How do you find that peace inside yourself that you've ran away from yourself for so long? So very gradually, and that sponsor, I just remember her, she used to say, do something nice for yourself. And that used to always make me cry because I just couldn't think, what on earth can I do that's nice for myself? You know, when I used to feel those ways, I always used to drink. So that was no longer in the bargain. And gradually I discovered, you know, discovered things that I like doing and people I liked hanging around with. And yeah, I started sponsoring people from an early, you know, from early on in my recovery. People were drawn to me because I'd be a good listener, might not be as honest as I could be with people, but, you know, but I did go through a lot of sharing with other people and them with me. And that has been that's been the footstone of my sobriety, really, and still is today. You know, that people are in my life that I share absolutely everything with them, that aren't secrets that I used to carry, and the shame and the guilt, you know, the remorse that I used to carry with me, but mostly just the shame for being who I was. So yeah, I have still have a sponsor today. She is suffering with Alzheimer's. That is gradually coming on her, but I actually had a chat with her this morning and it was a really good chat. And lots of other people in my life that I can share who I am today. And that's that freedom they speak about, a freedom. You'll know a new freedom and a new happiness. And that for me is not only accepting I'm an alcoholic, but accepting who I am, feeling that I'm good enough. and I have something to give this world today. There is some purpose. And I like the preamble that says, you know, our primary purpose is to stay sober, carry this message. And I have that. I have that today, you know, that I'm a part of a group and I show up regularly for meetings. I show up for service. And not because I'm a saint or anything, because I even went away from AA for what, for a short period. I forget how long it was, to be truthful. But I felt like I had enough of all of this talk about drinking and sobriety. And I thought that I had progressed onto a higher spiritual plane. And that was many years ago. I think I was about 12 years sober or something at the time. And I didn't drink, but I was in a strange place in my head because I actually really missed AA. I really missed the fellowship. And it was like a battle with myself had started again, where I had to overcome the person that didn't want to reach out again, that had come back to me. You know, that person that was always like pretending I'm fine, there's nothing wrong here, you know, don't look here. So I went to visit a friend who was in the fellowship, and he just listened to me, and then he said, "Would you like a comment, or do you want me to just remain silent?" And I said, "I'd like a comment." He said, "Well, if I was you, I'd leave that door to AA firmly open for yourself." And you know, that was the best comment I ever heard. He didn't say, "Oh, if I was you, I'd run back to a meeting." If he'd have said that, I might have just gone the other way, you know, because I'd always hate being told what to do. So he said, "Leave that door open for yourself." And gradually, well, it wasn't gradual. I came back to AA and I got myself 90 meetings in 90 days because I knew that I needed that. I've heard about brainwashing, and I knew I needed the brainwashing. I needed my brain washed out of the place where it was independent and not needing and not part of, and not part of this fellowship anymore. I needed that to change again, you know. So, yeah, I got the 90 in 90, and gradually, you know, I got myself into the thick of it again. But I've no doubt about scratch under the surface, and you'll find the mad woman there that wants to do it all her own way, that doesn't need anybody, that doesn't, you know, doesn't want to belong to anything. She's still firmly there, but I think I keep a rein on that. I keep being as honest as I am, you know. And sometimes people are all like, "Oh, you're so cool and you're so calm and you're so this and that." And I just sometimes feel like people just don't even have a fucking clue who I am when they say things like that. They have no idea of how my head can be, how crazy I can be, and how, you know, how that other person who can be insane, you know. And I've often heard that insanity is when you're wanting to change other people. So one of the greatest gifts I got in this fellowship was doing that step four and seeing where could I change, not anybody else. Where could I change? And it's not like that's the easiest thing to learn and to stay with, but it's something that I come back to, you know. Yeah, so I'm so grateful. I love being sober. I love being alive. I'm amazed at what I've been given, at what I have today in sobriety. I mean, with being sober, I don't mean anything else at all, but that is the crux of it all. Everything else, as they say, is bonus and gifts, and I have loads of those bonuses and gifts. And yeah, I feel like I've said enough. And that I think I qualify as being an alcoholic, and I certainly qualify for having 37 years sober one day at a time. And I'm really, really grateful to you all, to AA, for giving me that. So I'll leave it there. Thank you.